ですよね。
Okay, so here is the translation by Stephen Grace Lapaupad.
Jai.
My dear Lord, your absolute authority cannot be directly experienced, but one can guess by seeing the activities of the world that everything is being destroyed in due course of time. The force of time is very strong, and everything is being destroyed by something else, just as one animal is being eaten by another animal. Time scatters everything, exactly as the wind scatters clouds in the sky. Purport. The process of destruction is going on according to the law of nature. Nothing within this material world can be permanent, although scientific philosophers, workers, and everyone else are trying to make things permanent. One foolish scientist recently declared that eventually life will be made permanent through science. Some so-called scientists are also trying to manufacture living entities within the laboratory. Thus, in one way or another, everyone is busy denying the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and rejecting the supreme authority of the Lord. However, the Lord is so powerful that he destroys everything in the form of death. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Mrityu Sarva Haras Chaham, I am all devouring death. The Lord is just like death to the atheist, for it takes away everything they accumulate in the material world. Hiranyakashipu, the father of Prahlad, always denied the existence of the Lord, and he tried to kill his 5 years old boy due to the boy's unflinching faith in God. However, in due course of time, the Lord appeared as Lord as Nrisingadev and killed Hiranyakashipu in the presence of his son. As stated in Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam 1.13.47, this killing process is natural. Jivo jivasya jivanam. One animal is food for another animal. A frog is eaten by a snake is eaten by a mongoose, and the mongoose is eaten by another animal. In this way, the process of destruction goes on by the supreme will of the Lord. Although we do not see the hand of the Supreme Lord directly, we can feel the presence of that hand through the Lord's process of destruction. We can see the cloud scattered by the wind, although we cannot see how this is being done because it is not possible to see the wind. Similarly, although we do not directly see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we can see that he controls the process of destruction. The destructive process is going on fiercely under the control of the Lord, but the atheists cannot see it. The verse again. My dear Lord, your absolute authority cannot be directly experienced, but one can guess by seeing the activities of the world that everything is being destroyed in due course of time. The form of time is very strong, and everything is being destroyed by something else, just as one animal is being eaten by another animal. Time scatters everything, exactly as the wind scatters cloud in the sky. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Prachayine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashchatya Vishchatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya
Namo Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sahito Bhakta Vrinda.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Vansha Kalpa Taru Vyasya,
Viva Sindhu Vyai Vasya,
Adhidhanam
Bhavanevyo, Krishna Devyo.
First of all, I just want to address the best greetings from Srila Srila Sachinanda Goswami to all of you. This morning has some visiting the doctor, some meeting, so he said, please, you go and do good service and please greet all the devotees in the temple. So here we have very serious verse in Srimad Bhagavatam. You speak about this destruction that is actually directly under Krishna's control. And the verse more specifically explains that one cannot experience Krishna directly, but one can see actually the effect that actually Krishna is the supreme authority or the absolute authority. And there is this very beautiful analogy that the wind may be there and scatters the clouds. And although we don't see the wind, but we see that the clouds are being moved or scattered, and then we know wind is there. That's also often people might ask, how do you know that God exists? Or did you see him? But we always say, like we cannot see the wind, we can see the effect of the wind. So in the same way, we might not be able to see God right now, but we see the living entities, we see life. And this is actually the effect, this is done because of the presence of God everywhere. So it's a very nice analogy that shows us that even if we cannot perceive or experience the Lord directly, we can experience Him while seeing His action, while seeing that He is actually moving everything around. Sometimes Sachinandana Swami will say, don't try to see Krishna's face or Krishna's form immediately, but try to see Krishna's hands. Try to see how he's actually in charge of everything, how he's actually controlling everything. Srila Prabhupada also mentioned that many, many people in this world, they try to deny the presence of the Lord so that they can so-called be free or act as they like. I remember it's always amazing to see videos of Prabhupada speaking or preaching, and it's amazing how he would be bold and how he would sometimes speak really with big professors and sometimes would tell them, you are rascals. and everyone will accept it. Nobody could say anything. And I remember one instance when he was saying, if you don't believe in God, you will see him. You will see him as death. When death will come, you will see him as death. He will come as death personified and he will take everything away from you. You see that? Totally scared. But Prabhupada had this boldness. And actually, this, when we are in connection with that aspect of destruction, of that aspect of Krishna destroying everything, it makes us very grave, very serious in our spiritual life, when we see that everything is going to be destroyed. This takes away all our material hopes. When death is close by, if someone dies around us, how serious we become about life. All the superficial stuff are being removed when we are reminded about death. If a person is very close to death, he cannot enjoy anything on this material world. Even if he gets enjoyment, he knows, I will die. What is the use of all of that? And we can see, for example, when we are in India, we see death everywhere. We see animals dying on the street. We see people sick and dying. We see that. But here in the West, everything is so carefully hidden. We are almost like in the movie of Buddha, little Buddha, of Siddhartha, who was living in such beautiful atmosphere, and nobody will show him about death, about disease and old age. So it's almost like this here. Yeah. But sometimes we have glimpses, and sometimes people around us are dying. And this always brings us back to understand, okay, I need to use my time very, very carefully. It's also very interesting, Prabhupada's analogy that is given according to death. He's saying that he's giving the example of the cat, or the baby cat, and the mouse. Both of them may be grasped by the mother cow, the mother cat, sorry, by the mother cat. And actually, for the baby cat to be in the mother cat, it's very loving. But for the mouse to be taken by the mother cat, it's death. So in the same way, the devotee will not see actually death as something painful or something terrible. He will see death actually as being taken by the Lord. So it's a very different perspective from the devotee's life. And also, the devotees can understand better that Krishna is actually this absolute authority. One, for us, or for the devotees, it's not necessary to be seeing death everywhere to understand that actually Krishna is under control. He's actually the absolute authority. Of course, although we are devotees, sometimes we might forget that. And death will also help the devotees to remember that he is actually the absolute authority. Absolute authority means absolute control. He's the absolute controller. That's also something we have heard in so many lectures, that Krishna is the supreme controller. I think there we have a very nice opportunity to train ourselves during the life, to see during the life, to try to see in that way. And that means to try to accept whatever is given to us, whatever situation comes to us, to accept them how they are coming. And that means to accept Krishna as the Supreme Controller. We have so often expectation of how things should be done, or how we would like things to come. But to accept Krishna as a supreme authority is to accept everything that comes as his mercy, good or bad, or whatever happened. I think that should be the motto of today. Try to see anything that will happen to me as directly under Krishna's control. We know that actually Krishna is controlling everything through his material energy. Anything funny to say?
It should be the motto of the Yoga Expo.
No problem, it's fine. So I was saying that we know how Krishna is in control through his material energy, that everything is actually moving through his external potency. But for the devotees, we should know that actually that's Krishna himself who is taking care. It's Krishna personally who is there, who is arranging our lives. I was speaking yesterday with one devotee who was really difficult at time in his life, really heavy troubles, and we could feel that this person did not like to accept what was arranged for him, because of course it's painful, who wants to accept that? And I felt that this devotee had a type of feeling of angry feeling toward Krishna, like thinking, why you did that to me? Like, okay, I have my beads in my hands, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, but I don't like you. You did something bad to me. And this devotee obviously was going through trouble and could not take shelter because of this attitude in the heart. So it's very easy to hear that in lecture. When life is going well, everything is very easy to accept Krishna is in control. But when life becomes difficult, there is the test to see how much do we believe that Krishna is really in control, and how much do we believe that even whatever is happening to us is actually for our benefit. It might be actually a blessing in disguise that one is not able to understand. We often have our own concepts of what is good and what is bad, but Krishna is in another plane, and it's not always easy to understand. But if we can just train ourselves or learn to accept whatever is happening, good and bad, as Krishna's supreme authority, absolute authority, that he's actually in control of everything, life can become so nectarian. It's actually Krishna consciousness to see everything ascended by Krishna. As long as we want to be in control, we are very far away from Krishna consciousness. But when we accept the control of the supreme absolute authority, then actually we are in Krishna consciousness. And something I would like to add into that, I had a very nice experience this year in the Govardhana retreat in India. We had to take a sankalpa in the beginning, sankalpa that would take us during the whole retreat of what we want to do, or what we want to offer to Krishna, or how we want the retreat to be, something like this. And somehow I was inspired to take this retreat as my sankalpa was, whatever come to me, whatever services come to me, I will take that as personally sent by Giriraj. This is his personal service, and I will not fail. I will just do it, and I will know inside my heart, this is my secret arrangement with Giriraj. And I think this secret make the things very, very tasteful. to have this relationship with Krishna, or this understanding, okay, whatever come, I know it's from you, it's coming from you, and I will follow it, and I will fulfill whatever come, knowing it's sent by you. And I had such a blissful week. Whenever something will come, I would just watch from the corner of my eyes to Giriraj. Yeah. And actually, life becomes so easy when we are aware that everything is arranged by the Lord. Like when the Guru chastised you, or when someone got on your nerves or on your ego, and you know, oh, that's sent by the Lord. Then it's very easy to behave properly, to accept it. But when one do not have this awareness, immediately the ego come up. Immediately we rebel, we defend ourselves. But when one can have this awareness that everything is under Krishna's control, then it becomes actually very easy to go along with Krishna's plan, to be actually in the flow, in Krishna's flow of mercy. I think that's very nice to contemplate these points in our daily life, and we can keep this intimacy with Krishna, this secret perspective of, okay, that's coming from you, I will do it. Like one devotee was writing me, I will be with your team from this date and that date, and you can ask me everything. I will be there, and I will not protest against anything. And that's very, very good. That's the vision of a devotee. I will do service. Whatever comes to you. So I think it's very good for us to train ourselves to not be facing death, to come to that understanding, but actually to develop that understanding as life is going, as we are practicing devotional life, that we include the space for Krishna, that we include that awareness that actually everything is under control. And at that time, there is no need of any fear, no need of any anxieties. We know everything is coming for the best. And then one can surrender. One can surrender to all situation. But often those expectations, they are in between. Those expectations make our life difficult. Once Chandramouli Maharaj came in Zagreb, we did a little kirtan to welcome him, and he sat on the Vyasasana, and then he spoke that he was saying that our expectations are the main reasons of our sufferings. Mm. Because we are so much expecting things, whenever they don't come true, then we have to suffer in those times. And then at the end I asked Maharaj, is it alright to expect to make progress in spiritual life? And Maharaj gave a very nice answer. He said, it's alright, but that's the beginning. That's when you are in the beginning of spiritual life. When you become more advanced, you just want to serve. Mm-hmm. You don't care for anything else. You just want to serve. You don't expect anything. You just desire please to serve. That's actually the attitude of a servant. The servant is, whatever my master desires, I will be there to fulfill. I don't want to protest. I don't want my own interest. Whatever comes, here I am. I am your servant. That's the attitude of a servant. I would like to speak a little bit about this destruction of matter, this animal eating the other one, that everything is going to destruction. Radhanath Swami was explaining a very nice story when he was in the Himalayas. He was chanting japa close to the Ganga, I think. It was close to the Ganga. And while chanting japa, suddenly he saw that a big bird was turning around him in the sky. It was coming lower and lower and lower. He felt, oh my God, I hope he don't think I'm a dead animal and he will come on me. Anyway, he was chanting and looking at that bird, and suddenly that bird went down like a flash and went into water, grasped a fish and flew away. And Maharaj was there. Amazing. And he was saying, see that fish. He was just living, having his normal life in the water, and in 1 second, death had come and taken him. And this is actually this could actually happen to every one of us. In one moment, we can be taken from death. He was also explaining another story of a student in Bombay who was actually in the Bhakti Sangha group. And he was a nice devotee. He was progressing nicely in his spiritual life. And after some time, he came to some higher studies and he told the devotee, oh, now I really need to study. I will not come to the Bhakti Sanghas anymore. Now I want to jump really in my studies. And the devotee said, yeah, sure, do your work. And devotees always try to give him association. But he just get carried away from the devotee association. And he passed his exams very nicely. He ended everything. And then the devotee said, let's do a feast. Let's do something next Saturday. We do a feast just to glorify your success and to. And this person say, I'm sorry, but on that day I have another feast with my school friends. And he went to that party, and they were drinking and doing all type of nonsense. And I don't know exactly what happened, but he happened to die on that same night. Maybe some accident or something happened, and the devotees were feeling so sad. They were thinking, see, he just got caught when he was in the time lost from the devotee association. Do you remember what happened? You seem to know the story also.
Yeah, I don't remember, but not accident, maybe.
Yeah. So that shows how death can come quickly. Also in Goloka Dham, in our temple in Germany, that's in the middle of the forest, that you can go for such beautiful walks. And Maharaj was explaining that when you go and walk in the forest, you see many trees that have a red cross on them. And that means meant for destruction. That means they will cut those trees down. And Maharaj was saying, I was walking there and I was looking at those trees. And then I understand we all have this red cross on our forehead. We all are meant for destruction. We will all come to that point. And this understanding makes us so serious in devotional life.
Mm.
And that's amazing. And so often it is recommended to keep this awareness that death will come in front of our eyes.
Mm.
Mm. I also get sometimes this feeling when I see the season passing. Summer, winter, spring, autumn. I just feel, oh look, the time is all devouring. The time is taking everything away. I'm supposed to progress spiritually. What am I doing with my spiritual life? Am I really using my time properly? And then we have songs from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur laments, I am now old. What did I do of my spiritual life? My mind do not cooperate anymore with me. What will I do now? It's too late. It's too late. And I guess it might happen to many people when we are close to death to regret that we did not give our 100%, that we did not give our 100% in our spiritual journey. Some acharya are singing, why did I not worship Krishna? And this this got stuck in my mind 1 year during Kartik when I was staying in Varshana. Why did I not worship Krishna? So many aratis, I was in the temple, so many arati I gave to the deity, so many mantra I sang, but how many times did I really worship Krishna? Was I really in that mood of worshipping Krishna? And then I felt this acharya is speaking the truth, at least for me. How much did I really worship Krishna in my life? So that's really help us to become very sincere, to really use our time properly. I remember some years ago, Satchinandana Swami took the devotees for a walk. It was in the Veda Academy, also in the nature. And there we met a death meditation. Maharaj, he put us in a meditation state. And then he was telling us, we are actually right now walking in the snow with some friends. And then the weather become bad and wind come and snow comes. And then you cannot see so well, but you are just walking, and then you lose the group. And you are walking, and then you lose direction. You don't know where to go anymore, but you just keep on walking, walking, walking to not freeze to death. And suddenly you just fall into a ditch or into a hole, and you break your leg. And then you cannot move. And you are there in the snow, and the body starts to freeze, and then you die. It was really strong experience. And then he did a second death meditation that was a little less traumatic, it was a little easier. I mean, we were just lying in the death bed, and our relatives were around us and looking at us, and we were looking at them. And then Maharaj said, okay, now you close your eyes. You start to chant Hare Krishna, and then you leave your body. And at that time, I realized, my God, in my first death, I did not think of Krishna.
Mm.
And what I thought was my family members, was my mother, my sister, my father. That was what came in my mind. Mm. And I realized, actually, I missed my first death. I mean, it's nice to think of them, they are nice people, but that's not there I want to go. And I remember after this death meditation, we walk back to the Veda Academy, and I just felt like I cannot speak to anyone. What should I tell? What should I say? What should I discuss? What about all those superficial things I'm doing? I don't want to do that anymore. Now I just can chant and just pray and surrender. I have nothing else I can do. This meditation had brought me in such deep conscious state that I need actually to take my life very, very serious. Srila Prabhupada will sometimes say in his lecture, what are you doing for eternity? So many of the action we are doing will be wasted, will be in vain, everything will be destroyed. But only actually devotional service is what is eternal, what will stay with us. There is a very nice story in that connection of a sadhu who was traveling, and he became old and he thought, maybe I should find a good place where I could stay and stop traveling. So he went to a village and he felt, wow, here is such a beautiful place, and the energy really, really is very sweet. Maybe I should stay in that village. And then entering the village, he saw there was a graveyard. And he just had a look on the graves, and he saw that people had lived for a very short amount of time. Mr. da-da-da-da-da had left for 3.5 years, and this one for 5 years, and this one for 1.5 years, this one 6 months. And, oh my God, this village is maybe not so auspicious. So he thought, let me continue my road, that's not my village. But it was late, he decided, okay, let me at least spend the night here and tomorrow I go. So the next morning when he woke up and went out of the house, he saw that the entire village was in front of his house. They were all looking at him and thought, my God, what will happen to me now? And the chief of the village said, you are a sadhu. You should enlighten us. You should give a lecture before leaving. So he said, okay. So everyone sat down, he gave his lecture. He was amazed. Everyone was just so carefully listening. Usually everyone would sleep during his lecture, but that time everyone was just totally awake, taking notes, and oh my God, there is really something strange going on in this village. But anyway, I go away now. The lecture was done, and he left the village. And when he went out of the village, he passed again in front of the graveyard, and there a man was waiting for him. The man said, where are you going? So the sadhu said, well, I'm traveling sadhu. I'm continuing my journey. I was sleeping one night here. Now I will go further where the Lord is bringing me. And the man said, but you did not want to stay somewhere. You did not like the atmosphere of our village. So, I cannot lie. Now I have to be honest. So he said, see, I would like to stay, but when I see the duration of the life of the member of your community, I'm just afraid to stay here. I don't want to die soon. I want to still be alive for some time. And the man started to laugh loudly. And he said, you don't understand. Those people, they were living very long. They had a very long life. But what we do in our village, we calculate the real duration of their life. And the real duration of their life is the real time that they were truly engaged in devotion to the Lord. And then we put that together, and that's their duration of life. So you can stay in our village. That's very good. And that's make the point. That's actually the real duration of our life. Those moments of bhakti, those moments when one is actually truly connected to Krishna, when one is truly wanting to serve the Lord. This is the true duration of the life. That's what will remain with us. All other things will be destroyed. This is our real wealth, this service. All those small services we are doing, although we might not be aware of what we are really doing when we are doing service, but this is actually the real life. This is our wealth. our awareness, this ability to serve. Now, I would like to speak a little bit about this bhakti. This bhakti that should become like a fire, that should become actually tivra, that should become intensified. Mm-hmm. Tivra bhakti, like a strong fire. Bhakti actually should not be half-hearted. We should not hesitate to do bhakti. Bhakti should be done actually with full strength. We should jump into it. We should give our full self into this service. Tivra bhakti. Intense bhakti. With our full being into what we are doing. This is Jiva Goswami's preaching in Bhakti Sandarbha. He's speaking about this Tivra bhakti. And he gives the analogy of the river, the strong river, which is coming down from the hills, and that no rocks can stop.
Mm.
Even if some rocks will come in between, the river will not stop. We'll take another way, but we'll continue straight to the goal. In the same way, our service to the Lord should be not able to be stopped, not able to be interrupted. Nothing could come in between. It's like a big flow of devotion to Krishna that cannot be stopped at any cost. But this bhakti need to be intense. Jiva Goswami gives another analogy. He's giving the analogy of you have some wood that is wet. It's winter, it's cold outside, and you have some wood, you want to make fire. So if you make just a small fire, you will get just smoke that will go in your eyes. But if you put a strong fire, then the strong fire will burn out the water which is in the wood and will actually burn totally the wood.
Mm-hmm.
So in the same way, he said, if our bhakti is half-hearted, if it's a small, like trying to burn a wet wood just with a lighter. Yeah, just a small flame. It will be very, very low, very, very slow process. But if this bhakti is strong, then it will burn. And actually he said that this wet wood is our anartas. And if we do bhakti with such small intensity, we have almost no chance to burn out those anartas. They will just come visible to us and make pain in our eyes, but they will not really burn away unless one do this tivra bhakti, this intense bhakti.
Mm.
And then Jiva Goswami said, we have tried so many things in this world until now. So why don't we try this tivra bhakti?
Mm.
We are still in this world, that means we are not successful. So why not try to do this tivra bhakti, this intense bhakti? Now you may ask, yeah, you are kind, Gaurahari, with your analogies and everything, but how do we do that?
Mm.
And I would say on the practical level, it's very good, we have to start somewhere. We cannot be all the time in that intensity of bhakti, but we should start somewhere. So we have small times that we are doing in direct worship of Krishna. Like for example, when we are offering food, or when we are offering obeisances, or when we are chanting japa, or chanting Gayatri, or those moments which are not like the full day, but are specific moments that are totally worship
mm-hmm.
of Krishna. So I think we can at least start in those moments, that when we do those basic activities, but which are direct worship to Krishna, at least in those moments we should try to give our full energy, our full attention, our full awareness to the practice. Okay, we might space out the rest of the day, but we have to start somewhere, isn't it? We have to start somewhere, so we can start in those small moments which are direct service to Krishna. That's the time we can start to really give our attention. So, what is the time? Yeah. I would like to end this lecture by telling you a little bit about one very nice devotee who was expressing her devotion to Krishna in a very beautiful way. When Krishna was staying in Mathura, he was He had the meeting with the washerman. I think you are all accustomed with that story. So then he got this beautiful piece of cloth to change himself. Krishna was thinking, anyway, now I'm in the city, I should wear some other clothes. I have like a forest clothes, now I need new clothes. And then he met the tailor on the road, and this tailor was with many of his tailor co-workers. And they all started to make beautiful outfit for Krishna, Balaram, and all the cowboy. Instantly, everyone started to make new outfit, and they were doing such a beautiful work. They would take colors of one clothes from one. They would cut out a flower and pick up the flower on the turban of the other one to make good contrast with color. And actually, it was very, very beautiful. It was almost like a miracle happening on the king road, the Rajpath of Mathura, the road that was going toward Kamsa. Now when Krishna was decorated like this so beautifully, and the tailors, they were doing the outfit or the clothes of Krishna in such a precise way, because they knew he might need to fight in the future, so better he can move very nicely in his clothes. So, when Krishna was decorated like this, he continued walking on the Rajpath. There was thousands of people. It was a big, big road, and thousands of people were walking there. And out of those thousand people, suddenly Krishna's eyes became fixed on one particular person. She was a very, very beautiful lady. She just had hunchback. But she was actually very, very beautiful. So Krishna went straight to her. And she had in her hand a big plate which was full of small balls which had sandalwood paste. Many different sandalwood paste mixed with herbs, with spices, with different fragrance. And she used to go to Kamsa to decorate Kamsa with this sandalwood paste. And Kamsa loved her so much, liked her so much because of that service. So Krishna went right toward her. When he came close to next to Kupsha, he started to laugh. Now it's not so respectful. I mean, when you come to a person, you just laugh in front of the person. If the person has little ego, will think, what did I do? Or why is laughing about me? And maybe I don't look properly, or But so Krishna came in front of Kupcha and just started to laugh. And Kupcha just was wondering, why is he laughing at me? And there are actually many reasons about Krishna's laughing, but my notes are in Berlin, so I could not. But I remember one of the reasons. When Krishna saw Kupcha, because she was bent, she was a little small. And Krishna was thinking, in the previous incarnation I was Vamanadeva, I was also small, so we could make a good match. Then Krishna asked him, "Who are you?" And even before she could answer, he said, "For who is that sandalwood paste?" And that's a sign that Krishna was moved by her presence. He was actually attracted by this beautiful lady, and that showed that when a person becomes attracted by a beautiful lady, he might lose a little bit the discrimination, or lose his mind a little bit. Like when you ask a question, you usually wait for the answer before asking another question. But Krishna came and said, "Who are you? What is your name? And then, and for who is that?" And Krishna wanted to have the sandalwood paste. So she answered, "My name is Trivikram, because I'm bended in three places." She had three bends in her back. And Krishna thought, "I am Tribhanga. You are Trivikrama, I am Tribhanga. And again, we could do a good match." So Krishna asked for Kupcha so that she would give him the sandalwood paste. And it was a very dangerous situation. Kamsa was very cruel. And this sandalwood paste was meant for him. And everyone was looking the scene. In this Rajpath, everyone was looking now at Kupcha and Krishna. And everyone could go to Kamsa and tell him what is happening, and she would be killed for such offense, to not give to him, to give to someone else something that was meant to him. But Kusha decided to nevertheless give. And here we see this intense bhakti, this intense devotion of the person. She was ready to even die just to give, to please Krishna, just to give Krishna what he wanted. And then she started to decorate Krishna with this sandalwood paste. From the navel up, she decorated the full body of Krishna. And it's not like in our temple we do with sandalwood paste. You take a flower and boom, boom. She was doing that with her fingers, and she even used something like a brush to paint some different parts of Krishna's body in a very beautiful way. She would use different colors in different places. At a certain time, she took Krishna's head on her left hand so that Krishna could pose his hand on it, and then she was decorating around his mouth, around his eyes, all his face, very beautiful designs. She was doing that with so much care, so much love. After sometimes Krishna said, okay, that's enough. But she could not stop. She said, wait. A little more there. And that's exhibition of bhakti. I mean, she was not exhibiting it, she was just doing it. But there we see bhakti. We see how the devotee go so fine into the service he has to do with Krishna, so much in the detail, to really give pleasure to Krishna. When one really wants to give pleasure to the person we are serving, when we really do that into the detail. There is an example of this careful service when they were building up the Taj Mahal. There was one of the worker that was making the cement masala, the cement mixture. And he was taking so much time to do that cement masala that the boss came and said, "Hey, what are you doing? We have also other things to do." And he just shouted at him. And then he left. And then the worker became so angry that he took the cement masala, sent to his boss. And somehow he did not reach the boss, but it went on the wall. And nobody noticed that in the beginning. But afterward, nobody could take away that cement. It was such good cement. It had been done so nicely that even today you can find this cement, this splash of cement in the Taj Mahal. So that's a small story that shows that when the service is done really with care, really with time to do it, then it can really be successful or be really be potent and that's what we want to do. And yesterday one very nice devotee was repairing the car of Maharaj because the car was broken. So we already tried to squeeze the devotee in his time, saying, okay, we will need the car at this time and that time, and can you do it in this small amount of time? The devotee said, no, you arrange something for the evening. If I make it, maybe it's good, but I don't want to be rush. I want to do good service. And I think that's a very nice example. That's a way we come to bhakti, the way of doing our service very nicely. So Kupsha was also doing such a good work. And we have the opportunity to do the same, like Kupsha. The deities is standing there for us to learn. For us to learn how to serve Krishna personally one day. All this service we do to the deity is our training to once do it directly on Krishna's body. So it's very, very lucky for those who are Brahman initiated, or maybe even in such a temple, one can do service to the deities, maybe only with first initiation, or maybe some service without. That's actually such a great opportunity. It's very, very nice for the devotee to take the opportunity to also time to times come to the temple if you are Kriyastas or if you don't live in the temple and do service for the deities. This is our training for the spiritual world. In the spiritual world we will serve Krishna directly, and now we can train ourselves to give that service to the deities. Krishna was very pleased from her service, and also from her surrender, that she took the risk of giving him that service. So Krishna stepped on her feet and then took his hand like this and with a jerk straightened her away, and she became very, very beautiful. She was already very, very beautiful, but now she was like a princess. And anyway, then she invited Krishna to visit her in her house, and Krishna just continued his transcendental loving journey, meeting some other devotees on the way and having some more display of loving exchange with his devotees. So I want to stop here. I think it's a very nice example with Kubja and the way she was painting so beautifully Krishna, and the way she was ready to actually surrender, to risk her own life just to please Krishna. So I don't know if you have some comments or some questions. Yep.
One question, because in the beginning we were talking from this one Prabhu, that he had this talk, and because of his lack of faith, he felt that he's angry with Krishna.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, what such a person can do, because there's this different kind of perfected human beings, some can see that, some can see that, my case also was similar, and I got the deeper, But is there some possibility to do something oneself and not wait for the deeper to come and, for getting out of this stuck position?
I think the first step in there, this type of situation, is to accept. To accept that the suffering or whatever is happening to us, which is not good, it's like this. I cannot not try to go against. To just okay, Krishna, from now on I accept, and I accept it, but please you do your work to arrange it that it become better. I'm not like, oh, why did you do this? I'm against. I accept it and I take shelter. Okay, I accept it. This is all your plan. This is all under your control. But please, arrange so that everything comes. I don't pray anymore. Please build it up again like I want it. But I say, okay, you decide everything. Now I give my case in your hand. And now I will accept whatever comes. But please arrange that the situation come better, that I can revive my relationship with you, and that I can live maybe properly in this world. So I think the first step is to accept it. Another time, in the spiritual journey, there are many crossroads. Here we are, here Krishna, spiritual world is, here is the road that goes to Krishna. Very easy. In the middle, there are some crossroads where you can change your directions. And everyone goes through those crossroads. And those crossroads are often tests in the spiritual life, difficulties or moments. And there we can see where we want to go. If we want to give Krishna if we want to leave the hand to Krishna, if we want Krishna to save us, or if we feel, oh, Krishna is anyway not so good, let's try to do the work on my own. So I think those crossroads are opportunity to strengthen our faith. Maybe our faith is not so strong, but if we go through, if we surrender and we let everything in the hand of Krishna and pray, it always works. And it works for everyone. So it's mainly accepting. Accepting what happened is given by the Lord, and offering oneself, surrendering and praying and taking shelter. That's why we get those difficulties, to help us to take deeper and deeper shelter. And whenever we take deeper shelter, Krishna will reciprocate, and that will bring more faith. You see, you surrender, Krishna reciprocated, and your faith grows. So it's, I think, mainly acceptance of the situation, and okay, Krishna, I let go. I let go of the situation. You please take care, and it works. It works all the time.
My question is also in relationship to that. I can appreciate from my own life experience that what you're saying is very true and accurate, and you know, certainly the case. What is paining my heart is seeing someone that's very dear to me being in the same situation, experiencing difficulty and blaming Krishna or not being able to not take shelter. And then what to do when someone dear to you is having that experience. And you know, even I shared, oh, this is what happened to me, and then I did this, and and as well, he should be doing it for me. You know, like there's just something, I feel unable to relieve the situation, or by my own personal example, be able to demonstrate this is good, and ultimately I just, there's nothing I can do to help this person at this point, and now I've come here, but I know like it's my sister, and she's having difficulty, and she's asking, please stay and help me, and that's a bit, you have to surrender, you know, this is out of my hands, really, and so now I'm here, and I still feel some, like, tug, you know, like I've abandoned my sister and her baby, they have no shelter, and, you know, and I'm very sad about this.
Give regular news to her. Call her regularly now with Skype or those things. We can do it for cheap. Write her an email. I think of you, and here he's so nice, and I experienced this, I experienced that, and Krishna show me this or show me that. You share a little bit the nectar you are experiencing, and you give regular news, and you pray for her. That's often we think it doesn't work to pray for others, but it works so strongly. It's amazing. When we pray for ourselves, maybe it doesn't work so well. but when we pray for others, it's just amazing how it can work. So I think that's something we can do. But the best is to really give good association, a kind association, taking care. But we cannot do more than this. Praying is very... And then it's really up to the person to decide which way the person wants. And Krishna leave the free will to everyone to choose whatever you want to do. So I think it's good that you go on in your life. You could stay all your life next to her, and maybe in 20 years she will make the step. but it's good that you do your life, but to keep on giving good news to her and showing you are there for her. I do the same for my family. When I left my normal life to go to Krishna consciousness, they were all like, "Oh, we will lose our son," and they were, and I give them regular news, like every 2 weeks or so, I send an email or phone call, and they feel Krishna consciousness is wonderful. They feel, "Oh, let's hear bhajan now," and they become attracted by Krishna consciousness. They see that's, I did not leave them for Krishna. So I think that's a good tip too.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Sorry, Rangadevi, I don't forget your question. So Rangadevi. Lady first.
No, I'm just wondering. I mean, I like very much the. I mean, I like the whole lecture very much, but also this point about how we should accept everything and see it as personally centered in Krishna. And it's a very nice point, and I know and believe one can make very nice experience with it. But my question is just, can we really see everything as sent by Krishna? Or are there also situations which is actually maybe sent by someone else than Krishna? In a way, like shall we really accept everything and just surrender? Or is there also some situation where we should make some decision ourselves and do it differently? I was just thinking, for example, even the same example you gave in the lecture about this Prabhuji from Chapati or whatever, who was, you know, who in one point he decided to go into the studies and leave Krishna consciousness in a way or whatever, and then in the end to have this party, this whole dramatic example. But I mean, he could also have seen, okay, I was studying, now Krishna gave me opportunity to continue my study in the higher level, it's sent by Krishna, I have to do this, and then in the end my schoolmates, they made a party, it's also sent by Krishna,
So I have, like, maybe they invited before then the devotees, and so Krishna sent it, like, in this sense one can see actually everything is by Krishna, but where is the border, you know, or what was wrong in his decision, if we see that everything was sent by Krishna.
That's actually the answer is very simple. That's need to be checked according to gurus, according to guru, according to sadhus, and according to shastra. There we find what is actually favorable or unfavorable for Krishna consciousness. Now, whatever comes on your way, you have to filter it, and not just. Of course, the point. It's good that you asked this question. The point was, I accept everything coming from Krishna. But still, you need to filter it if it's coming from internal energy or external energy. So one needs a little bit discrimination to not accept everything blindly. But we can accept even the external things, or let's say things coming from Maya. We can also see them coming from Krishna, in the sense that nobody is independent from Krishna. So everything that is sent to us is anyway under the control of Krishna. Also the Maya Shakti is under his control. So you can see it coming from Krishna to taste your faith, to taste your... Sorry.
It's coming from Krishna.
That was external energy. so we need a little discrimination on the things, and we can always speak with devotees. Okay, here two choices are coming in my life: should I study or not, or how should I do? And often things, when the things come again and again and again and again, it's often the sign. Okay, that's what I need to do. I remember there is a nice devotee who always had this question: should I remain brahmachari or should I go on study? And the sadhus or gurus in him were saying, yeah, I think you should continue in brahmachari life, you are doing quite good there. But he would always come again with that question. And suddenly it was obvious that was, he had tried to keep on going in the brahmacharya ashram, but it was coming again and again, and then suddenly it was, yeah, why not try your study? It's something that come and come. Often when those issues, they come again and again and again and again, that means here there is something we need to change, to situate ourselves maybe better or things like this. And I think we all have those experiences of steps in life where, in order to make more progress, we might need to follow this voice that comes again and again and again. And then we have a way to do that in Krishna consciousness. One can do this study and forget Krishna, but one can do his study keeping a very good standard of sadhana. I know devotees who do very big studies and who manage easily to chant 16 rounds in the morning and do their studies and to think, how will I dedicate that to Krishna? So it's we need also to situate our life sometimes, but we can also do it in Krishna conscious way, without putting Krishna aside and, okay, now I do my thing, and Krishna, that's another thing. I mean, it's a very large question. One could elaborate a lot. I don't know if I reached, if you get a satisfying answer.
Yeah, it's a nice explanation, but the point is a little
different.
the question is more really like, is there sometimes the thing where we, you know, if we have to make some endeavor to go against something which comes, you know, like sometimes something comes and you say we have to just accept everything as Krishna's mercy, but sometimes we have to also make the decision and fight a little bit against the situation in a way, you know.
Like if some difficulty comes?
Yeah, if some trouble comes in the life, shall I just surrender and say anyway Krishna sent me the trouble, or shall I also try to make some endeavor to change the situation? Could it be also sometimes that I have to make an endeavor to change it and not to just accept?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Yeah, one need to make some endeavors. Yeah, that's sure. I mean, I was speaking with one brahmachari in Berlin who is going in quite some difficulties in his life, like no taste anymore. And he said, I said, did you speak with your Guru Maharaj? He said, yeah, I speak. And I said, what did he say? He said, come, like fight. You need to fight for your spiritual life, to protect your spiritual life. Go on, keep on going. When I hear your question, I think it might be different for different devotees, but I feel what power do we have to fight. I feel the much better is to surrender. The much better is to take shelter in Krishna. Knowing, okay, Krishna, this is coming for you, please protect me from that. Please protect me from this which is not good. Please give me the intelligence to do. Sometimes the endeavor need always to be there, and somehow, sometimes we need to use strength or to fight. Sometimes I remember there was one lady who was crazy once in a festival, and I had the service to put her out of the temple, and I had really to fight to bring her out. I mean, sometimes one has to fight, and one has to do the endeavor for sure, but I think taking shelter is much more important. And seeing everything is under Krishna's control, let me take shelter so that he help me to bring the best out of it. So I don't know if I'm sorry, everyone is filtering all information through his own mind, and I don't know if I could give you a satisfying answer.
It's a good answer. I could argue much more.
Yeah.
But it's my fault.
Okay. Let's give the voice to Sebastian.
Okay, I read in the introduction the Bhagavad Gita, and there Prabhupada explains there are five topics in the Bhagavad Gita: the Ishvara, Jiva, the Prakriti, and the relations in between, it means karma and time. But to make it complete, there is a sixth topic, which is the relationship between the Jiva and Ishvara, and us and Krishna, and this is Bhakti. And Bhakti is also explained in the Bhagavad Gita. So at least I think Bhagavad Gita speaking also about Bhakti, but you find in this introduction also in Purushan's commentary that there are five main topics of Bhagavad Gita. So my question is, why is Bhakti not in the list of these five main topics?
I think That's analyzing the Bhagavad Gita in that way, with different sections. But throughout the Bhagavad Gita, or through all those different sections, Bhakti is very much put it in front. And especially in Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, through all the chapters, you will get to the point that is actually Bhakti, that is the absolute. Now, the absolute activity of the living entities, that what we should do, what we are meant to do, what is, so it's really obvious now why do we have only maybe one chapter about Bhakti, or one section about Bhakti, and the other one, I think how it is now, but I'm sorry, here I'm using a little bit my logic, but I think how it is now, Bhakti has much more space. That if it will be just one section for Bhakti. Because now Bhakti is pervading all the different topics. Bhakti is shown in all different topics. But there might be, I'm not so scholarly inclined. I cannot, I think Kuvaleshaya, maybe you have some better.
I don't know better, but just something you said stirred some thoughts also about my logic, so but that the like we can, like, it's, there's certain laws, you know, like where, like, they're it's just the way it is. Bhakti is a choice, and ultimately in Bhagavad Gita there's so many things, this is how you do this, how you do this, how you do it. But Krishna left Arjuna with the choice. He said, now I've explained everything to you. all of these different things. Now do as you like. And so, because it's not a requirement on our part to love Krishna. That's an opportunity and a choice, but it's not like gravity throws something up and then it comes down. It's by the nature of bhakti, it's not a law, it's a mood. And so it seems as a subject, it's like a thing. You know, mm-hmm. Whereas what is the conclusion you come to from that?
So in that way, it doesn't fit in the list of topics.
Because it's not something that, like Prabhu said, it's not something that then it becomes squeezed into one particular chapter, and then this is a thing, and then it becomes objectified, and then scholars then, this is, you know, but it's actually, it's how one, it's the conclusion one can come to from all of that hearing of Krishna, but it's not like you have to accept. Then Srimad Bhagavatam is for that purpose, where the bhakti is then so voluminously expressed.
I think you wanted also to add something or to say something.
Yes, before it was like if there's difficulties, normally a sign that there's still some problems inside. So Krishna shows some situation or arranges in a way that we realize, okay, there needs to be changed something, because we are like Satchitananda, we are always blissful, all knowledgeable, eternal, and if there is some difficulties, then there's something wrong. And this is just the external energy showing us the way, where to go to the right direction. And if we try to satisfy the spiritual needs, then we go to the right direction. And then all the difficulties will disappear, because we align again with Krishna, and surrendering also is needed, but it's not surrendering to particular pieces of the situation, but to the that Krishna arranged all the situation, and then you also realize, okay, that is not what I want. For example, from when I left from Yoga Expo, I was from Kirtan, totally in ecstasy, and then all the people come drinking and so on, and I was thinking, okay, this I don't like anymore. And so I made a nice decision, and before it was like, I'm not so strong in it, and Krishna showed it to me to make a very clear picture, and then it's very, very precise. Mm.
Thank you. So I think we are quite over time today.
But you can speak until the half past the hour, I think is what they allow, right?
There is also just something that comes to my mind, also according to time, all the worrying time. It's actually I don't know how I thought of that subject, but I mean, in the spiritual world, there is also time. There is morning, there is lunch, there is afternoon, there is evening. Mm. There is also a succession of time. But in the spiritual world, the difference is the time in the spiritual is not devouring anything. But time is there in the pastimes of the Lord. But there is no destruction at all. Mm.
So the breakfast doesn't become cold.
Yeah. In the spiritual world, you are meaning. Okay, so we'll stop here. Thank you for your wonderful audience. It's very enlivening to speak to awakened audience, and it's very so nice to churn Krishna conscious topic, to really deeply engage our mind in thinking of those aspects. That's the way we should, we are able to become Krishna conscious, by really absorbing our mind into those topics, like bathing, taking a bath in spiritual knowledge, in spiritual understanding, in Krishna consciousness. Garantarat Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanandi.
Yay.